This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Today on Flashpoints, we report on a national day of actions by educators against standardized testing. Also, postal workers and their supporters fight back against major cuts in the postal system. And the ghost of Judy Berry still biting at the heels of the FBI and the Oakland Police Department. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. This is your daily investigative news magazine. Well, first up, attacks on the post office. We are going to take a look at what Congress is trying to do to privatize one of the key institutions that working people still depend on. And joining us to talk about this is Jamie Partridge. He's founding member of Communities and Postal Workers United. He joins us from Portland, Oregon. Also, we're joined by our own Dave Welsh. He's here in the Bay Area organizing in support of the post office. And in a moment, I think we'll be joined by Gray Brecken. Let me begin with you, Jamie Partridge, founding member of Communities Postal Workers United. What's at stake here? What's this big battle about?
This big battle is about union busting and privatization of the Postal Service. Postal Service is a $67 billion business, profitable. The 1% would love to get its hands on the Postal Service. And as we know, as the attacks on public services generally and public service workers and our unions moves apace in all aspects of public service. The Postal Service is a big prize. It's the largest unionized employer in the country, 400,000 unionized workers, and it's a cream that the 1% would like to skim off. And of course, they're destroying universal service and affordable rates in the process.
And we know that working class folks still depend on the post office. And there are many people who don't have the kind of access to the internet and will be, in terms of the government, will be slowly cut out because it'll be more and more difficult to get the kind of internet access that you need if you can't pay for it. So what has the Postal Service meant? What's the service that it provides?
Well, the Postal Service is most important, as you mentioned, to probably the most vulnerable communities, the rural areas, the low-income neighborhoods, the elderly, small businesses, folks that, like you said, don't have as much internet access or depend for checks or billing for medicines on the Postal Service, and certainly on the connection that the letter carrier provides. What's happened today is that the Postmaster General has announced that he's going to eliminate Saturday delivery on August 5th, which means that folks who depend on, like small businesses and elderly folks, on a regular mail service without delay are going to be most hard hit. And, of course, it'll mean the elimination of 1/6 of the postal workforce, 80,000 jobs.
Now, you, less than a year ago, you were part of a group that founded Communities and Postal Workers United. Tell us about, just very briefly, about the activities and what you have planned.
Communities and Postal Workers United was founded out of a lack of activity by our national union leadership in response to the Postmaster General announcing he was about to close half the post offices and half the mail processing plants in the nation, and that he was moving forward with eliminating six-day delivery and door-to-door delivery. We beat back those challenges for a time with massive turnouts at various hearings the Postal Service is mandated to hold for post office closures and plant closures. But that, as it turned out, was only postponed until this summer when the Postmaster General started eliminating mail processing plants. He's already closed 10% of the mail processing plants, eliminating about 20,000 jobs. And he's eliminated half the full-time postmaster positions in rural post offices. But we're building our movement as broad and deep as we can. We are in about 20 cities now with coalitions of postal workers across all the different crafts and communities, especially those most hard hit, like seniors, veterans, and the rural communities.
Also joining us is Gray Brecken. He's a professor. He's a project scholar of the Living New Deal Project. Gray Brecken, what is at stake here? You call this, I guess, you say we are watching a daylight bank heist with no cop on the beat. What's at stake here?
Well, it's just like your other speaker said, we're about to lose the constitutionally mandated postal service that's been in operation for over 220 years, founded by Ben Franklin. And but we probably won't have it in about 5 years or less at the rate that Postmaster Donahoe is going. He will probably be the last Postmaster General because he is essentially liquidating the service that we've all come to depend on and take for granted. It's actually quite a miracle. I got interested in it about 2 years ago when I began to realize that more and more post offices were being sold. And these are often the finest buildings in many towns. They're sometimes small palaces, and the first one I became aware of was Modesto, a beautiful Renaissance-style post office with murals on the inside. That was sold, and then more and more people got in touch with me in Ukiah and Venice and La Jolla and various other places.
These are all cities in California.
These are all in California, which is really bearing the brunt, although Connecticut, the Connecticut Gold Coast, is not far behind, because the ones, of course, that are going up for sale first are the ones on the most expensive real estate. That happens to be in our state and in Connecticut, but it's happening all over the country. It's now starting to happen in New York City as well, too, so they're getting a taste of what the smaller towns all around the country are experiencing. But these buildings are often really exquisite. They're the best in many small towns, and that's not accidental. They were built that way to represent the integrity and our connection with the federal government at its very best in providing a universal service at reasonable cost to everybody. And many of them are decorated with murals and sculpture from the New Deal. They're unique in the world, actually. I have friends in Australia who, when they come to the United States, they do road trips and just navigate by the post offices which they want to see. There's no other country in the world that has an inheritance like this, and it's all being thrown on the market now for profit. And it's all publicly owned. This was built by our parents and our grandparents who paid for the artwork and the buildings, but it's all being privatized now.
What do Senator Dianne Feinstein and her billionaire husband Richard Bloom have to do with this? Are they in the gain side of this?
They're very much in the game. Last June, I believe it was, the U.S. Postal Service gave Richard Blum's real estate tentacle, CBRE, CB Richard Ellis, the exclusive contract to sell our post offices, not only to sell them, but also to advise them on which ones to sell. And then they also get more by apparently arranging the leases as the Postal Service sells the buildings that it already owns. It moves into leased spaces, and CBRE also arranges for that as well, too. Now, we don't have any definitive proof yet that the senator had anything to do with arranging this, but it certainly couldn't have hurt that the chairman of the board of CBRE happens to be married to perhaps the most powerful senator in the U.S. Congress, and certainly one of the most powerful people in the Democratic Party, because Blum and Feinstein are both notorious rainmakers for the Democratic Party. And what's really astonished me is the way that the press has totally ignored this story. You know, senators, congresspeople are not supposed to engage in even the appearance of conflict of interest. But nobody has investigated this story except for the very small paper in La Jolla, the La Jolla Light, which had the cojones to actually name Senator Feinstein in connection with this. No other paper, including the New York Times, has done so.
And I noticed that they're getting ready to sell the Bronx Post Office, which has the extraordinary murals by Ben Shahn, right? Have they sold those yet or what?
No, they haven't. They just announced that last week. It's a monumental New Deal post office. I'd actually foreseen this last year. I wrote an article about how once the Postal Service realized that it has artwork worth many, many millions of dollars, including, and I named Ben Shahn, I was thinking of that post office, then that artwork would be up for sale too, even though we, the people, own that artwork and paid for it. And it was just a few days ago, actually, that they announced that the Bronx Central Post Office, with its Ben Shahn mural cycle, will be up for sale. And then yesterday, I think it was, they announced, or I should say that the people in Chelsea in Manhattan found that their post office is also for sale. That has two New Deal sculptures in it. And it's not just the press that's ignored this. The whole arts community has been totally asleep while our artwork all around the country is basically going on the block.
All right, that's the voice of Gray Brecken. Also joining us, we just have a couple of minutes left, but I wanted to get a local activist here. We're broadcasting from Berkeley, California. We're joined by Dave Welsh, who we last spoke to about this. He was on a hunger fest in Washington, D.C., where there were actions taking place. Dave, you're actually at a meeting right now in San Francisco. What's going on?
Well, we're just going to get started in a couple of minutes, a meeting of the Save the Post Office, Save the People's Post Office Coalition. We're part of Communities and Postal Workers United. There are all these local coalitions, and we're the local one. I just wanted to say, piggyback on what Gray was saying about the Berkeley Post Office, which is, of course, the main post office, is one of the ones that's being sold off, and to alert people that on Tuesday, well, I'm not sure it's a Tuesday. It's February the 26th at 7 o'clock. At 7 o'clock at the old City Hall, where the City Council often meets.
That's in for people in the San Francisco area, correct?
That's for people in the San Francisco.
All right. How do people find out about that? What's the number for that?
Well, if you call 510-847-8657.
They can get information on that.
They get information on that. And also, we're having an action at the St. Patrick's Day parade. You know how St. Patrick drove the snakes out of Ireland, supposedly. Well, we're going to demand that we drive the snakes out of the post office, including Richard Blum, Daryl Issa, this right-wing congressman from Southern California. Postmaster
Patrick Donahoe.
Okay. All right. And finally, let me come back to you. Finally, we're out of time, but Jamie Partridge. But if people want to get more information about the work that you're doing with Dave and Gray Brecken, what's the best way to tap in? Is there a website?
Yes. It's www.cpwunited.com.
All right, and Gray Brecken, you want to put a final cap on this one, the bottom line for you?
Well, the bottom line is that our property, the public's property, is being sold all over the country. It's unique, it's valuable, and, you know, it's just one more step towards a privatization of everything that we own. Step will be to sell the national parks and state parks as well, too. I mean, this is all, what is behind this is ALEC and the right-wingers who don't believe at all that there should be any public domain or public services whatsoever. Everything should be private, and they're the ones who are behind what's actually going on with the postal system.
All right, back to that battle for the commons. We thank you, Gray Brecken. We thank you as well, Jamie Partridge. And, of course, always appreciate having you with us, Dave Welsh. We're going to follow the story very closely. And we thank you all for bringing this story that nobody's talking about, as you point out, Gray Brecken, to the public's attention and to the listeners of Pacifica Radio. Thanks, all of you, for being with us on Flashpoints.
Thanks, Dennis.
Really pleasure to have you listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Now, we're going to turn our attention to a National Day of Actions against standardized testing. Stay tuned. In Berkeley, I'm Dennis Bernstein. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Well, today is a National Day of Action in support of Seattle teachers who are protesting standardized testing and the privatization of the school system. One of the, shall we say, ringleaders in this battle against standardized testing is Jesse Hakopian. He is, in fact, a teacher at Seattle's Garfield High School, where a lot of this has begun on this round. And Jesse, welcome to Flashpoints.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's good to have you with us. Tell us how this began there in Garfield School, High School in Seattle. How did this get churned up to this point?
Well, you know, it really just began as a teacher's lounge conversation about this MAP test, and teachers were sharing stories about how they were seeing questions that weren't expected to be taught at that grade level, how students were feeling frustrated because they were being asked questions that they weren't being taught in the classroom, and students would often just race each other to see who could finish first or just pick a favorite letter and press that on the computer generated test until they got to the end, and how this test really had so many flaws with it. And when we realized that so many teachers agreed that this test was deeply flawed, we called an all-staff meeting. We got about 90% of the staff there, and we had a thorough discussion. You know, this was through the course of weeks we'd been discussing informally and having small meetings and doing reading and research, and then finally it culminated in this all-staff meeting where people asked frankly what could be the consequences for refusing to give a district mandated test. And I had to go through with them. It could be labeled insubordination.